I'm in Willington High Street at a place called Cornerstone with a gentleman called Steve Vasey. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Steve, tell us a little bit about this place and a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Well, I manage Cornerstone Supported Housing. We have a board of trustees who oversee everything, who are a great bunch of people. And we've been in Willington itself now for about 6 years, but in existence we've been running sort of for about 17 years, roughly 6 years of charity. So we've been getting funding for 6 years, but prior to that it was funded by myself for many years, and it came into existence through, it was actually a young girl I met. She was I had a house that I rented out. I was a plumber by trade, and it was my pension, if you like, this house. And we had a young girl come called Angela, who was heavily pregnant. And it was a head and heart thing. She was 17-year-old, and she'd come with another woman who I assumed was a mum. Anyhow, it later turned out that she sought some support from a support worker who worked with young pregnant girls, you know. So she'd shown the initiative to make an effort, and so I'd got chatting to her, and it was a head and heart decision. So my head was saying, just walk away. It's fraught with danger, this one. But my heart was saying, you know, she's made an effort here. She's really tried hard. So we took Angela in. No, she's probably the best person I've ever dealt with, if I'm honest with you. She tried so, so hard. And now the bumps, a guy called Adam. Adam's 18-year-old, a great big, huge, lumbering thing he is. So so that was the journey. I think that experience taught me that not to be too judgmental. And there is people in life that do deserve a chance. And so Cornerstone, I suppose, evolved from that initial meeting to where we are today.
Do you still keep in touch with Angela?
Yeah, she's still out and about. She still lives over in New Brunswick. And if I'm over there, I don't go out my way to call, but she's busy. She's one of the busiest people I've ever known. And she also works on Durham Market. So if I'm in Durham, I'll always call around by her stall. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm New Brunswick passing through, I always see her knocking around. So yeah, I still keep in touch.
So what's the focus of your charity then? What's your aim?
I suppose our aim is to give opportunities to people who are marginalised for whatever reason. It could be through homelessness, through mental health issues, through they could have had an offending past and have decided that they want to turn over a new leaf. So I suppose our existence is to create opportunities for people who otherwise would probably find it quite difficult to be given a break. And we have a good success rate. For those who are offending, we have an 80% non-reoffending rate. We've been supported by Ron Hogg, the crime commissioner, who sees the work that we do. We partner the police. We work with most of the mental health teams, and we do well. It's a struggle, but we do well. Statistically, we do quite well.
Yeah, and those are remarkable statistics. How many people do you have in the unit at any one time?
At this point in time, we have 14 people who have either come into the what we class as the hostels. The hostels are basically small units of three beds where they share cooking facilities and bathrooms, and gives them a chance to learn how to live in a safe place where they can support one another, work together for a better goal, if you like. And once they've been in that situation for some time, and you can watch them grow and get more and more confident, then we have one or two flats that we can move them onto so they can live semi-independently. And the goal is always for them to go on and live an independent life, both independently in a living sense, but also financially as well. I mean, two of our lads are now employed by us. You know, one came... Paul came on, I think it was a Friday night, with a dog. He decided to go homeless because he had a dog and he wouldn't be parted with a blooming thing. So we ended up with his dog for a year living in the backyard. We built a kennel for it and everything in actually we're just out the back of where we are now. And it's been a struggle with Paul. The analogy I have of Paul, it's like a broken down car. I'll push him and push him and push him. And then you watch him roll away and you think, blooming neck, there he is, he's away. And then it just grinds to a halt, and you've got to go marching after him and push and push again. But I think I've pushed for the last time now, because he's got his own place, he's got his girlfriend, he has a daughter who he absolutely adores. Sadly, his dog, Dylan, died a few years ago, you know. But and he works for us, you know, he's got a job, it's the first job. And interestingly, we have a place in Hartlepool that we work with as well. We manage a unit that has 10 people in. It had quite a bad reputation, and we've managed to turn it round, and it's a good place and a place where people want to be now. But interestingly, Paul, for all years and years, had fingers pointed at him as being useless, hopeless, but he's just a really, really shy person. I mean, he travels well, roughly, it can be anywhere between 4 and 6 hours a day to get to and from work on buses all the way from here to Hartlepool, you know. And that's commitment. You know, you can't take that away from him. I mean, you know, I still feel like I'm pushing the car occasionally, but by and large, he's done well. And Paul's just one of many that we deal with.
That's a great story. Has he got another dog yet?
No, I won't let him. I know I shouldn't really. I know, I sound like a control freak, don't I? But I don't think we need. We went through a phase where he did want another dog, and it was kind of, I think he was on the rebound, you know. So, but it's gone beyond that now. But he has this dog, you know, his dog he absolutely idolises. She's everything. She is his life. So, so I don't think there'll be any more dogs in Paul's life now.
Okay. So, as part of the work that you do, obviously you're supporting people, you help them get back into, I'm guessing, out of kind of chaotic lives, back into like normal routine. Is that the sum of it?
Yeah, that pretty much.
How do you do that then?
Well, I think one thing is about the community. When we first started, when I first was working here on my own and I opened this office to make a statement of this is what we're going to do, you know, there was some unrest, and I absolutely understand that, because I think we're all fearful of what we don't know and what we don't understand. So I would never judge anybody for thinking badly of us, really, if I'm honest. But I would like to think, I don't mind them thinking badly of us, but as long as they can have something to base their judgment on. So if they give us time and let us, you know, and our community here in Willington did do that, and I'm really, really grateful to them. And they're part of this success story. Mm-hmm. But what we need to do, or what we had to do with the lads, was to try and get them to integrate within the community and feel as though they were part of it. So what I did was, originally I built a workshop, which is still in the yard now. It's little more than an 8x4 shed. And I got them to go in there and start working. So we went through a phase. I had wing mirrors broken and windows put out by locals, you know, and it was all cloak and dagger stuff, and it was a difficult time. However, we got this little workshop going. They were building things, and suddenly the community would come to us because they wanted things making or repairing in its little joinery shop. And then there was kind of a shift then where large parts of the community suddenly viewed the lads as a resource rather than a hindrance. And I think that was a turning point. And from there, you know, I'm going back 6 years or so ago, and we had the little shed in the yard. I mean, we still have it now, and some of the lads are a little bit more quiet to work with some of the stuff to do craft things in there. But we moved from there to a garage, if you like, and it wasn't the best thing in the world, but we still worked from there because it was bigger, because the demand for what we were doing grew. And now we've got a big factory unit, and we take on another one, and our lads work in there, you know. So they keep going, and they turn out products that has made a really good social enterprise, and it works quite well. You'll see our market stalls at Barnet Castle. If you go to Bondgate House, the bed store near the bus station in Bishop Auckland, that's all of our stuff in the backyard, and we're really grateful to them for letting us have that space as well. So if anybody wants a bed, go to Bondgate House. So it's kind of worked like that, and it's evolved into something that's quite big. And a byproduct of that was, we keep statistics, not personal statistics from the lads, but about their journey in life. And one of the things that we found was 90 to 95% hadn't engaged in mainstream school. So we made the decision that rather than putting sticky plasters on after the event when it's all gone wrong and drugs have become an issue or isolation or vulnerability, whatever, we decided we would look at some of those young people who haven't engaged in school. So we set up an alternative provision in Willington, in one of the units, and now we have the lads who won't go to school, who've been excluded, and they come to us, and the attendance has gone from an average of between 5 and 10% to 90 to 95%, and they come in through the holidays. They love being part of a team, hands-on. You know, the academic stuff they still kind of getting, because they have to work with measurements and they can make bespoke joinery items. And I mean, as an example, one of our lads now works for us, Jack. I mean, he came, he'd have the best reputation in the world, to be fair, but he'd spent a year with us and he's just an incredible talent, and now he's an apprentice with Cornerstone, so he works in the workshop. So as well as working with adults and people where it's all gone wrong and people are finding it difficult, we're also working with young people to try and prevent getting to that stage in a later stage in their lives, you know. And that happens at our, we have a factory unit at Lower Willington, and from there they build things, but they also sell things, and people have the luxury of going, and all it is quality stuff. I know I'm going to say that, aren't I? But it is quality stuff, and it's really reasonably priced. But people can go there, they can have things made to suit them as well, because not everybody's got great big long legs. They want to sit on a higher chair, they might want a lower chair. And the kids love it, you know. They love to work with customers because I think it makes them, and quite rightly so, it makes them feel important, you know. So it's a success story as well.
Yeah. Sounds fabulous. How many people do you work with every year, do you think?
I would say in an average year we'd be up to somewhere around about 120 to 130 people at any one time. And the different things that we do, you know. And that they're going to range from people who join the housing service that we do. They could come in to do some volunteering from another organisation. For example, the police might have someone who they think's on the cusp of change. Perhaps they've been a prolific offender, but they get the feeling as though they're at that time and they want to make a change. So they'll bring them to us. And we'll put them in the workshop, and more often than not, they engage, and it works quite well. So through all the different services that we offer, we'll be around about 140, I would think, throughout the course of a year.
Right. Wow, that's remarkable, isn't it? And I guess at the end of the day, these people, they've got a product, they've got something that they've made, and they're feeling proud of.
Absolutely, yeah. And they've got a reference as well from us, you know, so it helps them to go on but the mentor, there's a strange system takes place. It's kind of evolved. I would like to take ownership of it, but I'm afraid I can't, because what they do is, as they've been there longer, they feel more part of it. They'll have their own little space in the workshop where they like to keep things, and it all works together like any working environment. But when new people come in, they take on a role of a kind of mentor, you know, and we've never set this out. I mean, we'd love to say we had, it just happens, you know. So, and that's good, because it's them taking ownership. You know, we don't own the workshop. The ownership, the workshop's being created by really good people who give grants, you know. The fact that we've now made it financially sustainable is because of the people there. The people we work with, they're our greatest resource by far, you know. So we can get funding and that, and it's absolutely fantastic, and there's brilliant organisations out there who do that. But ultimately, we're only as good as our service users allow us to be, and I can, you know, we have really good service users, so we're grateful for that.
So your service users, what sort of background and where do they come from? What sort of variety do you have?
They come from all sorts of backgrounds. Some are from quite privileged backgrounds and it's gone wrong. And some have illnesses that they may come with. We have a guy at the moment, Lee, who's he's just a lovely fella, you know. He's 32, 33, and he has quite severe Asperger's. So we quite happily sit in his room all day and watch Carry On films and stuff like that, you know. But he loves buses, he loves transport, does Lee. And he can tell you any bus route in County Durham, any of that's his thing, his buses, transport and timetables. He's absolutely obsessed with them. But dealing with that, because we're not a mental health charity, you know, we take advice from other people if needs be. But what we do, you know, we've got some really good volunteers, and one volunteer in particular, she engaged with Lee and started taking them out on the bus. And now they travel all over, you know, they always, you know, Lee will get a pass and they shoot all over. And it's kind of a success story of a different kind, because you're measuring it not from did they offend and now they don't offend, or were they using drugs, now they're not using drugs, you know. You're measuring it in quite simple terms. It's about going out on a bus, you know, something that we might take for granted, but for Lee's a huge step. But, you know, because of the insight of some of the staff that we have, and, you know, they've managed to facilitate that and take him on that journey, if you like. And now he goes on his own, you know, he goes places on his own, and he quite enjoys that. And I mentioned about people from privileged backgrounds. I think people automatically is, you know, we're dealing with second and third generation unemployed. I mean, that's, you know, sadly that's a byproduct of the region that we live in the pits and whatever else. But it's not all like that, you know. We had one young girl who came to us who was a lovely girl, and she had her own demons that she had to deal with, and she was from a lovely family, lovely family who had their own business. They had a lovely house, and she just met the wrong lad at the wrong time in her life and went down a completely wrong road. And sadly, she's no longer with us. You know, when she left us, you know, she died. But we're still in touch with our family, you know, and I look at our family sometimes and I think, you know, it's but for the grace of God, isn't it? Because you do the best you can for your children, we all do. But you can't guarantee they're not going to meet somebody who's going to take them down the wrong route. You've just got to hope that that doesn't happen, you know. But again, it's an example how somebody from quite a privileged background can end up in a situation that they might not, you know, they might not have ideally set out to, but lo and behold, that's where they ended up.
Well, it sounds like a fantastic project. If people wanted to see the kind of work that you do and wanted to even get involved and, you know, buy some of the stuff that you're preparing, where would they find it?
Well, they can come down to our factory unit, which is at Low Willington Industrial Estate, Unit 4. they can go down there and have a look. Or the easiest place is probably Bongate House. It's right in the centre, so it's next to the bus station. So if they want to call around, go in the yard and you can see some of our stuff there. And we've also got beds in there that we make. We make handmade beds that are really robust. I think they're started something like £89. I sound like a salesman now. You know, but the garden furniture, I mean, you can buy a chair for £35. It's going to last you forever. It's heavy, really heavy stuff. Because a lot of our stuff's sold up in the Dales as well. And, you know, and I mean, it's open to all the elements, so it needs to be really good, you know. We have a website, which is www.cornerstone-housing.org. Or if somebody wanted to call us, they can call us on our office at 86 High Street, Willington, or my direct on my mobile 07971516915. And we're grateful to hear from anybody, you know, in whatever capacity. You need one to buy something, you can just ring them for a chat. I'll get in touch for a chat. We're really not bothered. But as many people as we can reach and spread the word about some of the people that we work with, that's great, you know.
So, Steve, are you still plumbing?
No. No, I'm not. No, it's...
Is this a full-time job?
It is now. It's become a full-time job. I don't have a moment to myself. It's 8 days a week. But I wouldn't change it for anything. I wouldn't swap it for plumbing again. I passed that affliction on to my son. He does it now, so... So no, that's where I am today.
Well, it looks like a fabulous project, and it's been a pleasure speaking to you this morning. Thank you very much.
And thank you for taking the time to come out and visit us as well. Okay, bye bye now.